Morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order the March 7, 2013 session of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. We're in session. We've got a number of folks here today. Senator Roblin, are you here for crab pots?
I am.
All right. That was a good guess.
He's a crab. He's a crabby senator.
That'd be great. Joe Rollator, would your folks be ready to do crab pots first?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3262. Good morning, distinguished colleagues.
Yes, it's really exciting to be over here and see this distinguished committee.
So. Didn't I just see you guys last night?
Yeah, you too.
Okay, thank you. For the record, Wayne Krieger, State Rep, District 1, South Coast. We were contacted by the crab people, as I call them, Joe Rollator in particular, regarding a problem that had developed on the Oregon coast. And we've, you know, come back to my enforcement days, we were aware of it, in that when the season gets done, some of the crab fishermen get on to another fishery and they just leave their gear out there. Sometimes it moves, tangles, causes hazard navigation, and in some cases even maybe somebody does some fishing. The program was developed in Washington that seems to have worked real well for removing those, and the exact details of how that will work, you can talk to the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Mr. Rollator when it comes up, but it's something that we do need to address, and I think there's great support in the commercial fishing industry to get those crab pots out of the ocean.
Thank you very much.
And thank you. Senator, for the record, Senator Arne Roblin, Senate District 5. What Wayne has said is entirely true, and I'd like to mention, though, that when it comes to crab pots not being picked up, it's not that they just go off to another fishery. There are actually storms on the coast at times, and it's oftentimes very hard to get out to sea to go get it before you're expected someplace else. So there are a number of reasons why this kind of stuff happens from time to time, and if there's a big storm, they move a lot, so finding them sometimes is also an issue. But they continue to be a problem, and they have for years picked up each other's pots and done things, brought them back to the dock. That became more of a problem when we started licensing each pot, and if you have a pot on your cart that's not your license, that can be a real problem. So finding out a system to make sure that the removal happens more judiciously, I think, is really important. It is important for all of us, and as we look at all the uses that are going out there, the entanglement of the pots with other kinds of fishing gear can be a problem. And so it is one of the deals when you're sharing a resource area amongst number of users who use different kinds of gear, it's important to move from one to the other a little bit better. And the crab people have tried to do that in the past. They continue to work on it. You can see some really ugly pictures of tangled masses of crab pots that have caused problems along the bottom and get rolling along in storms and so on and so forth. So this is one more way to make sure that each of these different fisheries is responsible for itself. And I really hope that this group will move it on, and you'll get to hear from some of the professionals here as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Didn't expect to hear you two gentlemen talking about licensed pot rolling along. So
about that's right.
With that, questions for this panel?
Mr. Chair, on any topic since we got it here, NOAA, pesticides, GMO as well.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
This is a tremendous bill, and certainly appreciate your bringing it forward. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Nick Furman and Kurt Melcher. Oh, and Joe Rollator. I forgot. Yeah. I missed you there.
He's coming anyway.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name's Joe Rollator. I represent the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission. I have a couple of things to point out. Our board chairman was unable to come today, but he did send a letter. His name's John Corbin. He's a crabber from the Astoria area, and I don't need to read his testimony. We also have an amendment. The Dash 1 amendments would open up the number of permit holders that are available to participate in this program. When we originally drafted the bill, we thought that only licensed Dungeness crab boats would want to do this, but we've heard that other folks might want to do this, and so we ask for the Dash 1 amendment, which allows any vessel with a commercial fishing license to be a participant in the program. So thank you very much. Nick?
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Nick Furman. Until this past October, I was the executive director of the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission, a position I held for 22 years. Chairman Witt and members of the committee, I want to begin by thanking Representative Witt for the opportunity to hearing today on this bill, and also thanking Representatives Krieger and Senator Roblin for being the chief sponsors. The last time the crab industry relied on Representative Krieger for a crab-specific bill was back in 2003, when the legislature passed what turned out to be the wildly successful state-supervised crab price negotiation bill. And I'm happy to report that, thanks to Wayne's efforts in that process, that we've used that for the last 10 years in the Dungeness crab fishery. It's been successful 8 out of the last 10 years in establishing a fair opening price for the fishery, and also contributing millions of dollars to the coastal economy and saving lives in the process. So we're the industry is quite appreciative. As you heard from the two people that testified, your colleagues before me, we have a problem on the coast. It's no secret that we put out upwards of 120,000 crab pots into the ocean every December, and when the season closes in August, not all of them come back in. The Dungeness Crab Commission has been working to try to solve this problem for the last 5 years. We worked with a successful partnership with ODF&W 4 and 5 years ago on a program to charter vessels to bring those crab pots in. Unfortunately, it was very expensive and it wasn't sustainable. We've tried crab pot bounties, we've tried volunteer efforts, and it finally dawned on us that there was no sense in reinventing the wheel. Washington has, and for the last 4 years, had a very successful program. And so we hope to be able to duplicate that in House Bill 3262. Just real quickly, the bill would exempt derelict and abandoned crab pots found in the ocean after August 28th from Oregon's personal property laws. It would authorize the Fish and Wildlife Commission to issue permits to fishermen who are interested in going out and cleaning up the ocean and bringing in those pots. It would establish provisions related to the disposition of those pots so that when a finder brings a crab pot in, there'll be options on what they have to do with that. They could sell it back to the original owner. They could keep it for their own string. They could do whatever they want with it. We think this will provide the necessary financial incentive for fishermen to take the time and the effort to go out in the ocean post-season and clean up that crab gear. We view this as an industry solution to an industry problem. We do have crab pots that are left out in the ocean, and technically after August 28th, they are illegal, so we think this will help us clear up a problem in that regard as well. And we also look forward to working closely with ODF&W to establish the parameters of this program, assuming that this bill would pass. So we appreciate your support for 3262 today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very, very much. And gentlemen, we truly do appreciate your bringing this bill forward. As you stated, the industry recognizing a problem and proposing what appears to be a very appropriate solution. So thank you for bringing this forward. Questions or comments? Mr. Krieger.
Where's the crab?
What good is it to have a some crab though without crab.
He knows what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. three strikes and I'm out.
Anything further? Thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to call up, please, Kurt Melcher.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Good morning. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We're providing written comments as well, and most of what we have to say here has actually already been said. I did want to highlight that the impact of, we do estimate annually that about 7.5% of the pots, the commercial Dungeness crab pots that are deployed, get lost at sea, which accounts or amounts to about 10,000 pots annually. Lost gear can have a multitude of negative impacts, both on the marine habitat, but also on the fishery resource itself, as some percentage of those pots may continue to fish, thus impacting the crab fishery in the future. And also, there's a significant amount of conflict that can occur between gear types with lost gear. When you have lost pots, many times the buoys are not easily detectable. You have both prop fouling as well as gear fouling associated with other fisheries, be they salmon troll or other activities on the ocean. This bill would, as is intended to, as stated previously, essentially exempt the retrieval of these lost pots from Oregon's personal property laws, and we think that's a good thing. We do want to note, and in our review of the bill, of course, as biologists, we're not experts in personal property law, and we would want to make sure, we would just recommend that folks who are experts in personal property law assure that it accomplishes the intent. With that, Mr. Chair, I would also speak to the Dash 1 amendment, and we do think that including all commercially licensed vessels in this program would be good, as all vessels have the opportunity or the chance of encountering lost or lost crab gear.
Tremendous.
Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Anyone with questions? Kurt, thank you. Appreciate that. Anyone else from the public who'd like to testify this morning on House Bill 3262? Last and final call. Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3262, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3262. Recognize Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 3515 on House Bill 3262.
Vice Chair Esquivel moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3262, dated March 5th, 2013. Is there any discussion on his motion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? So ordered. Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3262 as amended be moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Esquivel moves House Bill 3262 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on his motion. Seeing none, Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Flynn.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitfield.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Vice Chair
McMillan. Excused.
And Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. And so ordered. Representative Krieger, would you like to carry this bill? Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3262, and again, I want to thank everyone before I do for a good bill. With that, we're going to move on to...
Representative Kenmare is here if you want to go to his.
Representative Kenmare, we're here for fish carcasses. Are you ready?
It's a very heady bill.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2697. And Representative Kenemer, good morning.
Crabs to carcasses, huh?
Actually, these two are related.
Fish bait. Crab bait.
Crab bait, crab bait.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bill Kenemer, State Representative, District 39. Nice to be with you this morning for this, and I'm sorry, but the chairman and I have been punning about this for quite a while, so this rather heady bill. And we want to just give you the basic guts of what's going on. Maybe I should knock this off. But anyhow, I think this is a really great bill. It brings back a little memory. When I was a young kid, I had a buddy named Paul, and he lived with his grandma, and grandma used to take Paul and me camping and fishing every summer. And it was a lot of fun. We'd occasionally catch a trout, and we'd take that in, and grandma would carefully clean it. And then my job was usually to return it from whence it came. And I remember one summer, it was a funny thing. I caught my little fish and took it in, and Grandma cleaned it, and she said, and I got ready to take it back, and she says, oh no, we have to throw it in the garbage now. And it didn't make much sense to me, because I thought, you know, don't we return what comes from the river back to the river? But we've not been doing that, and there's some people here who are going to follow me who can explain the science of that a lot better, but we're realizing that there's something helpful in all those nutrients to return them from whence they came. And also, in our efforts to, in due diligence, we made the bill kind of complicated in trying to figure out where you might replace those guts, and Fish and Wildlife has a great amendment that simplifies it and will allow some of the technicalities to be finished out by rule. So I appreciate the hearing. I urge you to listen to the folks that follow. I think we've got a great bill, and encourage your support. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Representative Kenemer, we've received a Dash 1 amendment. Are you in support of that?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further for our colleague? Thank you very much, Representative Kenemer.
My pleasure. Thank you, Neil.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, Russell Bassett. And Tom Wolf, please. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning. Chair Witt, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Russell Bassett. I'm the executive director of the Northwest Steelheaders. I live in Malala, Oregon. I passed around some written testimony that has some more detail in terms of my testimony, but I kind of wanted to just share some examples of why I think this bill is important. When I was talking to other fish groups about it, pretty much everybody was supportive, but one group said, we do live fish, not dead fish, and that struck me as completely wrong. This is all about live fish, all about wild fish, actually. These nutrients are very important for our wild fish populations. The science on that's very clear. They dramatically increase macro invertebrate size and quantity. They do this, well, the quantity of macro invertebrates, which is the main food for young salmonids, and they also increase the size and quantity of smolts in a system by putting nutrients in the system. This is done artificially throughout the Pacific Northwest. I personally do an average of about 500 nutrients. We take them from the carcass, or we take them from the hatchery, we take those carcasses and put them in the water for nutrient enhancement. Artificially provide what has typically been done through natural processes, and we just don't have the fish runs that we used to have, nowhere near those, so we try to do it artificially. But last year we got maybe 50 fish is all from the hatchery. The runs were so low, those fish were not there to artificially provide nutrients. So this is a simple way for anglers to be involved in nutrient enhancement, which is a very natural process that should happen naturally. And yes, there are some concerns about creating public messes. There are some concerns with law enforcement. We tried to address those the best we could, looking at examples from other states. But we do agree with the Dash 1 amendment with ODFW that those should be addressed by rule. We will do everything we can, and when I say we, the steelheaders, to educate the public on this, especially the anglers, why it's important and how to do it properly. We'll take out an ad in the angling regs. If need be, we'll even pay for signage at places that are a problem. Steelheaders very much believe in the importance of nutrient enhancements, and this is an easy way to do it. I'm not the type of person that thinks just because other states do it, Oregon should do it, but in this case, Oregon should do it. So I encourage you to pass this bill out of committee and approve the Dash 1 amendment. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate your comments very much. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Chair Witt, committee members. For the record, my name is Tom Wolf, Chair of the Oregon and Executive Director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, and I'm here to support this bill. First, I want to tell a little bit of story. I have many heroes. My main three heroes, of course, are my mother, my father, and my grandfather, Casey. But I have a new hero, and that hero is Mark Few, the basketball coach at Gonzaga University. And on Monday, it was announced that Gonzaga was the number one team in the nation, a small Catholic school in Spokane. That's pretty amazing. And they had a huge press conference, only it was noted that Coach Few wasn't there. He had given the team off because they hadn't had a rest along, and he was out fly fishing on the Spokane River. And I thought, well, that's great, that fishing is more important than, and giving your team off is more important than that. And I was at the Sportsman Caucus banquet last night, and I was in the midst of a whole bunch of fishermen, and I kept thinking how much I love the sport of fishing. I've been doing it since I was 5 years old. I look forward to when the session will be over so that I can spend multiple times out on the river. And the problem with Oregon rivers and fishing as we attempt to bring back wild fish is that chemically they're very neutral in their pH, especially the ones on the coast. And years and years ago, when there were huge salmon runs, they got nutrients from the dead salmon carcasses that even though there was harvest by the native tribes, there were still a lot of carcasses to fertilize the rivers. Unfortunately, for a lot of reasons, we don't have that anymore. And as Russell said, that we are working with groups like Trout Unlimited and Steelheaders. We're working with ODFW to place hatchery carcasses in the stream to do nutrient enrichment. And studies by the Forest Service, studies by American Fisheries Society show that when you do that, you greatly increase the nutrient level of the waters and provide more food for macroinvertebrates and more food for young smolts, and will help increase the size of the wild runs. But this bill makes it very easy, as Russell stated, for the average fisherman to add the nutrients, this, as I call it, the fish guts bill, to the river. So we support it. I haven't seen the Dash 1 amendments, but if Russell supports it, I support it. And I think this is a great bill that will greatly increase the nutrients we put in stream so that we can continue to have fishermen, you know, and as my goal is, one of my goals is to keep the wonderful sport of fishing alive in the state, keep the wild fish numbers up so that people can catch them and harvest them if when they're large enough, and this bill will help us do it. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Questions? I'm not seeing any. Oh, Representative Clem, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Russell, can you mentioned you mentioned you're doing this now. What is the process that you do now versus what the process would be after the bill becomes law?
Chair Witt, Representative Clem, in terms of the process, the ways to minimize the potential issues of creating messes or for law enforcement were written into the bill. Instead of doing that into the statute, which probably
just one sec, let me try and be more clear. Why do we need a bill? What can you not do currently? Because it sounds like you're already depositing them in the rivers currently, from what you said.
Understood.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
Chair Witt, Representative Clem. Right now, it's technically illegal to put your carcasses back in the river.
That's what they're doing.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of us believe in, or some people, somebody who looks like me and acts like me, believes that nutrient enhancement.
We had a video of you.
and are already doing it. For example, I was on the Clackamas the other day, and we caught two hatchery fish, and of course we harvest them. But there were several people taken out at the boat ramp. And the last thing, you know, executive director of Fish Conservation Organization, last thing I need is a game violation or to be seen doing something I shouldn't be. So I took it home, and I threw my carcasses in the bin, and that just broke my heart. You know, I'm feeding rats instead of the fish.
So is there no way to do it now? I mean, you got in your letter something about the DEQ with their approval. Is that a, I'm trying to figure out if we're making an easier process, or really there's no way to do
it. This makes it legal for anglers to do it. Before, it was illegal.
It's against the law. Really.
Any additional questions?
John, stop doing
this. Just want to make it known for the record that our committee is here to serve, making good things legal. Thank you very much, John. I appreciate your comments. With that, just a slight explanation, folks. I'm going to temporarily close the public hearing on House Bill 2697, and the reason I'm doing this is so that we can make sure that Representative Bentz gets to talk to us about his bill and is able to get on his way with other business today. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3086. We'll get back to the other bill here in just a few moments. And I'd like to call up, please, Representative Bentz, and where's my... Here we go. And Judge Grassi, please.
Or we need to get this bill passed. Quickly.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for calling us up out of order. My name is Cliff Bentz, State Representative of District 60, which is now here in Harney, Grant, Baker, and part of Lake County. And the packet we're handing out to you now contains some materials which I would like to use as I address this issue that's reflected in the -2 amendment to 3086. The key to understanding the nature of this bill begins with an understanding of the scope and size of the area that's impacted by what's known as the core area habitat for the sage grouse. And so drawing your attention to the packet, which you should soon have, there is a map that looks like this of Oregon, and it shows two of my four counties. And those two counties that are called out are Malheur County and Harney County. And I call out the size of the Willamette Valley also to show that basically four Willamette Valleys would fit in just two of my counties. So if you'll reflect on that for just a moment, so we have some concept of the sheer size of the space that's affected by core habitat. And then if you'll look in your packet, you'll find two more maps that look like this. And these maps are, again, of Oregon, and they show Malheur and Harney counties, and they show the area that's affected by these designations. And again, it's extraordinarily important that everybody understand the sheer size of the space we are talking about. To put it in some sense of perspective, the area of just my two counties is almost the size of West Virginia, just two counties. And so the impact of this designation is huge. And I think these two particular maps that call out Korea do a huge disservice by not reflecting the scope of what's happened. I'm not here to argue about the designation. I'm here to say that that's what's already happening, and it is made necessary by virtue of the concern over the possible endangered nature of the sage grouse. We're not here to debate that. What we are here to debate is, and figure out a solution to, is how to prevent my area of the state from being taken off the table of commerce that we rely so much on in this state. And what's happening if we don't manage this appropriately is this area will be further frozen in time. as it has been because of other things that have occurred in the past 30 years. And as a result, it's become more and more of what's referred to in the National Geographic as the big empty. And it's becoming more empty all the time. And it's some people might focus, as Judge Grasty may and should, on those who are there, but I want this committee and all of Oregon to understand that. We cannot, as a state, afford to take this massive amount of what we've got off the table of commerce. We cannot. You know, it's not right. It's wrong. It's bad for our state. And so the bill that you see before you, the Dash 2 Amendment, is a means of opening the door that's been closed by virtue of the establishment of the core area, a tiny crack, to allow commerce to sneak through. And on little bitty areas in this massive scope of space. What will happen, and I've noticed it happens lots of times, is that if you're trying to do something on this land, it's blown completely out of proportion. You might be taking up 40 acres in the middle of 9 million acres, which is the size of just Malheur County. And suddenly, it's as though that 40-acre activity is covering all 9 million. And of course, it isn't. And this amendment, the Dash 2s, working in conjunction with another bill that is being brought by, I believe, the governor's office, House Bill 2106, the two working together will allow ODFMW to establish a means of mitigation, and then the Dash 2 amendments to 30086 will establish a means of implementing that mitigation. So one establishes the measure of what needs to be done to offset any activity, and this makes sure that it actually happens. So in the past, ODFMW is doing its best to protect Oregon from a listing, and this core habitat process is designed to do that. Good. However, we can't just lock it down and stop all activity. We cannot. And so this bill, along with the governor's bill, I believe, allow us a process to work within that core habitat area and at the same time, by mitigation, allow activities in my part of Oregon. And I will just say, I want to establish one more thing and then I'm pretty well done, but once the core habitat area is in place, the way the rules work, you can't do anything unless you get a permit. You can continue doing what you're doing, but if you want to do something different that requires some sort of a permit, and if that permit process requires insight and oversight from ODFMW, then the core area process thus far freezes the activity. Because ODFMW doesn't want to do anything as they await for the federal listing process to continue. This amendment and the governor's bill designs a means of assisting ODFMW in getting out of that current frozen position. So, Mr. Chair, I hope so much for the future of Oregon and my area that you'll be able to pass this Dash 2 amendment. And then I'm hoping also that ODFMW will support it because I believe it's consistent with what the governor's office is trying to do by establishing the measure of mitigation. This bill will not go into effect until January 1st of next year. And my understanding from the governor's office is that 2106 is going to be worked out and established before that date. So these two are designed to go in lockstep, and I urge your support. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very, very much. Judge Grassi, did you have some comments for us today?
Yes, I do. And Chair Witt, members of the committee, thanks for this opportunity. For the record, I'm Steve Grassi. I'm Harney County Judge. If I can make a slightly flippant remark as I start here, I truly am amazed by the work of all of you and your cohorts over here. I every time I come over here, I'm just amazed you'll put the time and dedication in. And it seems pretty insignificant when I think about Harney County government. And we deal with small issues, mental health, public health, tax assessment, tax collection. And I watched this committee this morning deal with fish guts and illegal pot. So, an interesting observation here. But moving on. I'm speaking in support of 3086 as well. Representative Bentz shows how big Harney County is, and somewhere his number's missed 2 miles. It's 10,228 square miles, so I don't know what he did with the 2 miles, but it's huge. I can drive 3 hours from Burns and still be in the county and go fishing, you know, enjoy the outdoors, look at sage grouse. So it's huge. And we've worked very, very hard to do centralized development, very specifically. Representative Bentz talked about these small 40-acre pots, spots. Even the biggest thing we've looked at, 8,000 acres of impacted area at a $6.5 million. Just a speck in the middle of it. Balancing the size of that place, development, having the opportunity to do it. 4 decades ago, Harney County had the highest per capita income of any county. We were the rich county. It's not true anymore. We're a couple from the bottom. There's a balance in here somewhere between species, habitat, people, those businesses that survive scattered throughout our county. And it's really important, and it's important for them to have an opportunity. And the culture of ODF&W occasionally requires them to be very focused, and appropriately so, but the rest of us need to work together with them and balance it. And I think this bill will give us that opportunity. Also puts ODF&W under the gun. All of us in government know we don't want to be under the gun. We want to have as much time as it takes to get something done. But business can't survive that way. They've got to be told yes or no, as the case may be, and they can move on and make decisions. So I think this bill's an important tool. I think it's an opportunity for us and to help move things ahead as we struggle in this whole state. How do we make our economy continue, improve, and balance the needs of nature as well at the same time? And I think we're way ahead of the spotted owl on this one. I hope we keep going down that road and prevent that kind of issue to the rest of the state. Thanks.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Representative Krieger.
Representative Bentz, all of us that are from rural communities are affected by the both federal and state Endangered Species Act and also the threat from the environmental for-profit industry of lawsuits. You're talking about this huge mass, and then you've got the entire Willamette Valley on your map here. Do you think there'd be an outcry if I was to file on something that would shut down the entire Willamette Valley for agriculture?
Because of a bug? A mouse? Or anything else?
I'm sure, Chair Witt and President Krieger, I'm sure there would be an outcry. And, of course, the hope today is that by drawing the parallel between the Willamette Valley and in my area, we can more clearly illustrate the impact on the entire state of today's decisions, because so often that area is ignored by those, by the bigger group of folks. And I think this is a great opportunity to understand and put in perspective the damage that could be done to those in the Willamette Valley if we don't manage the rest of our state appropriately. So, yeah, of course, the answer to your question is yes, there would be an outcry.
Well, I just want to let you know I very much appreciate the way you delivered the bill, the concept, and try to make people understand the impact to our rural counties and committees, you know, communities, and, you know, our 18 dependent timber counties that are suffering now, and most of them on the west side, some over there. All of this coming together makes our economies in rural Oregon extremely difficult for our communities to survive.
Prime Minister, Chair, and I neglected to thank the Chair for agreeing to hear this bill, and I want to do that. This is a hugely important thing, I think, to our state for many reasons. But I've been working in my communities with an attempt to bring people out of poverty and show the link between our failure to access our assets and the kids that aren't going on to school and the kids that aren't continuing in school because there are no jobs when they get out. And so some would say that's quite a space between today's bill and those kids, but that's not true. So the issue is, how do we do this appropriately with appropriate deference, and that's the wrong word, consideration of the species we've got to live with, and at the same time try to get our kids in out of poverty.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bence, I think this is a good bill, but more importantly, I think what we need to illustrate is the example in my county, which I'm kind of a semi-rural county. We have rural, and then we have a pretty good hub with Medford, with about 75,000-80,000 people. But our unemployment rate for 5 years straight, I believe, has been double digits, and I'm sure it's substantially worse in Harney County and Lake County and so on, some Malheur. Are you guys at below 11?
Mr. Chair, President Esquivel, I think not. I'm sure the judge would know better, but I do know that Malheur County suffers from the highest poverty level in the state, and this area, this core habitat, in large part, takes up much of Malheur County, and thus takes away the opportunity to try to address those poverty issues. We can't let that happen. That's the truth of it.
Thank you.
Additional questions, gentlemen? You've obviously done some very, very good work here, and I want to thank you for seeking the balance. And your hard work has obviously found that sweet spot, because as I look here on our witness sheet, I see no one signed up in opposition. Our committee began its work this session with a presentation on sustainability. And as I look at the bill that you have brought forward, you have obviously provided for the needs of sage-grouse, working with the governor on mitigation. And at the same time, you've found a way to be able to meet community needs and to meet the local economic needs of Harney County. I think by anyone's definition, this is illustrative of precisely what, when we achieve sustainability, what it brings. And thank you so much for finding that balance. It is, it's truly a remarkable work, and thank you for bringing this bill forward and for all the work that you put into it, finding that balance.
Thank you.
Folks, I'm going to continue with this bill so that we're not jumping back and forth, and we'll get back to our earlier bill here in just a moment. I'd like to call up, please, Jerry Fish and Greg Peden.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Greg Peden. With me today is Jerry Fish. Jerry's a partner at the Stoll Reeves Law Firm. We are here in support of this bill and to put a little bit of a fine point on the statements by Representative Bence and Judge Grassley. They articulated the issue extremely well, I think, and so I don't have to belabor the point. I will say that both Jerry and I, from time to time, have clients in the natural resources industries that come to Oregon looking for opportunities to invest in this state, and run into this scenario and get stuck in the process. And as Representative Benstead said, this is the vehicle to begin to allow them to go forward. We have a client today who is in this process and who's ready to invest in Eastern Oregon. and in a project that would employ hundreds of folks permanently in Eastern Oregon, and they're right in this crux, and so there is from our perspective a sense of urgency on this bill. Now I want to make clear that this bill doesn't mean that this bill passes that they get to just run off and do whatever they want in Eastern Oregon. What I'm saying here is that it allows them to go forward through the permitting process, potentially through the mitigation process if that's appropriate. So it strikes that balance that the representative was talking about. But if the bill doesn't pass, they're probably in a decision where they either take a pretty sizable risk, make some spend some money that they and no sense of whether any of that pays off, and that's a tough business decision for any business to make. I do want to highlight one piece of the bill that I think we need an additional amendment here, and I'll just say that Jerry doesn't have any specific testimony, but he's an expert in the natural resources area of law, so I asked him to join me just to, in case you had any technical questions. In Section 1 of the bill, Sub 3A, it talks a little bit about putting together the mitigation plan sort of early in the permitting process, and that probably, just from a technical standpoint here, doesn't quite work in terms of all of the work that would go into putting together a mitigation plan at that stage in the permitting process. So what we think we need here is just to rewrite that section in a manner that describes exactly with appropriate time, which would be a little bit later through the permitting process, when a mitigation plan would be appropriate. You wouldn't spend the money and develop and go all through all the work with the ODF&W and others to develop that mitigation plan before you knew that the project could get permitted. If the determination was made, okay, we have a project that we think works, now we need to talk about the mitigation plan, now you enter that phase. And I don't think this language quite works in that capacity just yet. We've mentioned this to Representative Bentz. We have a note into LC, so we would hope to get this language corrected and get it back to you ASAP.
Thank you very much. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. The nature of the amendment, to be a little more specific, would say all we're asking for, I think, up front with respect to a project that comes to the Fish and Wildlife Department.
Mr. Fish, would you please identify
yourself? I'm sorry. My name is Jerry Fish. I'm a partner at the law firm of Stoll Reeves in Portland, Oregon, and I work with a number of natural resource clients in energy projects and natural resource extraction projects, oil and gas, and minerals.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for hearing this testimony. The nature of the amendment that would be proposed is to recognize that the real issue for project proponents is this map that's been put in front of you. The big blue blobs on the map represent core area, and originally mapped to be fairly broad brush. They include transportation corridors, lots of areas that are cliffs and rocks and not sagebrush country. So they're very inclusive, and it's very restrictive. So what we're really advocating is if a project comes that needs a permit from the Energy Facility Siting Council or from DOGAMI for a major permitting process, often lasting in excess of 2 years, project proponents would like to know in advance whether or not there's agreement with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that habitat can be mitigated. The initial position of the department may be that we'd like to preserve all of it. But in the view of our experts that have worked on these areas, and in fact the way it's done if a species is actually listed under the Endangered Species Act, is you can always bring a proposal for mitigation. And although it may be impractical in the long run once you talk about it, there's almost always a way to mitigate so that you can disturb Area A and do something good in Area B and end up with a benefit to the species. That's really what we're asking, is an upfront acknowledgement that mitigation is feasible and that the actual mitigation plan will be worked out. As I said, the FSEC process, the DOGAMI process, lasts for years. They cost tens of millions of dollars, really, for a major project. It's a lot to ask for any applicant to come forward and say, we'd like you to fund that process. They pay for all the state agency's time. We'd like you to fund that process, and at the end, we'll tell you whether we think it's mitigatable. They're just not going to take the risk. In this case, millions of dollars have been spent already acquiring and exploring the property, and they really can't make a decision to spend several million more dollars without knowing that the agency basically agrees that mitigation is feasible. The plan for mitigation, the details of mitigation, will be worked out in the FSEC process. There's no intent to rush that. And it will be expensive, and it will be detailed, it will be complicated. Opportunities such as removing encroachment of junipers, helping to restore areas that have been burned severely, which are currently still in critical or in core habitat, but clearly are going to be a long time before they support sage grouse. There's opportunity to do good things. And we just want to know up front that we have a partnership to do that. Then it's worth spending a couple of years and millions of dollars, literally, to go through the permitting process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? I'm not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify today on House Bill 3086? Bill, come on forward.
Thank you, Chair Witt, Vice Chair, Committee for the Record, Bill Sluthing, Carpenters Industrial Council. Appreciate the time. Appreciate Representative Bentz and others putting this bill together. This is a good bill. And the reason I'm up here today is because if we would have taken these steps back in the late 70s and started working on a program with another natural resource, the sagebrush lands for eastern Oregon is a natural resource to those people. Our forest is a natural resource. If we had taken these steps and started working the program through in the late 70s, maybe we wouldn't be going through this litigation 40 years later about our national forest. This is a good step. It's going to help rural Oregon, and it's going to help those ranchers maintain their lands. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I think Representative Bentz has found a much better path to meeting all of our needs, economic, social, and environmental. Thank you very much. Questions for Bill? Thanks very much. Anyone else from the public on House Bill 3086? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3086. And if folks would bear with me just for a moment while I shift the ream of paper that I have up here. I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2697 and ask to come forward, please, Kurt Melcher and Georgia Coolidge.
Okay. Well, that's the carcass bill.
We're back to
fish steps.
Yeah. Good morning, gentlemen. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director, Department of Fish and Wildlife, providing written testimony here to you today as well. And I do want to note it is recycled from last week's hearing, so please accept the February 28th date on there.
Put on the bill.
and as such, this testimony does not reflect the Dash 1 amendments, which I know you now have, so I'll speak to those a little bit. But I wanted to just highlight for you all a couple of components. Nutrient enrichment, in particular marine nutrient enrichment, is well acknowledged as an important component of healthy and functioning ecosystems, particularly for our salmonids in Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. And since the mid-1990s, we've actually had a program, the department has, where we place surplus hatchery fish carcasses out in natural spawning areas. And Chair Witt and Representative Clem, I think that was the point of confusion earlier when Mr. Bassett was testifying. He was referring to some volunteer work that they do with us where they place carcasses, surplus hatchery fish carcasses, in streams specifically for nutrient enrichment. That
that occurs essentially. We have a blanket permit from DEQ. We don't. It's not considered a point source, so we have a blanket permit. We do, in fact, in the last carcass placement year, if you will, 2011-2012, ODFW and our volunteers placed 36,000 carcasses, and those are entire carcasses, not just, you know, entrails or head. It's entire fish carcasses in a number of waterways in Oregon. Over the years, one of the perpetual and annual questions that comes before the commission is, why can't we place our own carcasses, if you will, our entrails? Why can't I legally clean the fish in the stream? And the commission has essentially, and the department has basically not had the authority to allow that to occur under current statute. Placement of those materials without the permit from DEQ, placement of those materials is basically came under the littering statute, the ORS 164.785. So this bill before you today with the Dash 1 amendments merely provides an exception that anglers can return those fish parts, if you will, to the stream in which they from which they caught the fish and not be in violation of ORS 164.785. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. George, welcome to our committee.
Chair Witt, thank you. Good to be here. For the record, my name is George O'Coolidge, here on behalf of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association. NSIA's mission is the preservation, restoration, and enhancement of sports fishing. And for our folks, sports fishing means jobs, and healthy sports fishing is a result of healthy streams and lakes and rivers. We know that the natural process of spawning, salmon spawning, is critical to this ecosystem, and a wide variety of creatures rely on the flesh of dead adult salmon to survive. There was actually a study done in Alaska a few years ago that I remember watching, and they basically looked at a river, I think it was off of Bristol Bay, where for whatever reason they dammed it up and there wasn't any more returning salmon to that area. And what we saw is actually over the years that essentially flourishing area became kind of a wasteland. And if you look at sort of, we've talked about sort of the streams and sort of the other juvenile salmonoids that depend upon those carcasses, but it's also sort of the bugs that eat on those carcasses, the birds that eat those bugs, you know, that contribute to the flora and to the other areas, the deer and to the bear. It's a pretty significant impact. And so I'll keep things very just brief today and just say, you know, NSA again supports this bill. We think it's a good idea. And we support the Dash 1 amendment. I saw that this morning. So we'd ask that you move it forward.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So what we're saying is that the DEQ stopped this statewide? And it's a natural process. I understand that. And actually it is. No matter what you do with the fish, if you leave it in the stream, it's probably more natural than taking it out, eradicating it.
Sure. Chair Witt, Vice Chair Esquivel, in ORS 164.785, it basically is a statute that applies to all placement of offensive materials, and I can keep the bill language out for you, the actual legal language out for you, but it covers all placement of offensive materials in our rivers and waterways in the state, and that statute has been on the books for a long time. I honestly don't know. I mean, many, many decades that's been on the books. When you read that statute, it essentially prohibits anglers who catch a fish from removing the entrails or any other part and placing it back in the river. So what this language does is essentially provides an exception for that activity under this much broader offensive littering type statute.
Please.
The reason I question that is that I just don't understand how we get in some of these positions. And it could have been that we had some things going on that people wanted to take care of, and this encompassed this as kind of like collateral damage. And that's what I'm suspecting.
Chair Witt, Vice Chair Esquivel, I certainly suspect that is the case as well.
Representative Clem.
You make it legal for your dad.
Let me run a hypothetical scenario past you.
Looks like his dad.
So if
current law, could you do this hypothetically in a rural southern Oregon county? Could you clean your bass and then have your son or somebody like him row him across, then try and charge unwitting visitors from out of state for a buzzard show, $5 a buzzard? And is there an emergency clause on this bill? And I might need to make a phone call here real quick.
Chair Witt, Representative Clem, I think technically speaking, no, you would not have been able to do that.
Okay. I'm think glad. I don't know anybody doing
as
that.
A as a practical matter, and one of your members can, I'm sure, attest to it as well, there's not been a lot of enforcement of that particular type of activity, but nonetheless, technically it is not legal.
Thank you.
Glad you don't do that.
Representative Clem, we're just trying to scale back that illegal.
Here we go.
And Representative Clem, there, just to answer your second part, there is an emergency clause on this bill.
Anything further?
Move the bill.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. I'd like to call up, please, Steve Frank. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Chair Witt, committee members. My name is Steve Frank, and I live in Staten. I fish for salmon and steelhead most of my life. And yes, Representative Clem, you take the whole fish out. That's the way it's supposed to be. My understanding is the impetus for House Bill 2697 is return nutrients to from the fish carcass to wild steelhead for wild steelhead and salmon smolt. I'm going to read, so bear with me. I don't normally do this. I usually just talk. The greatest threat to these amazing fish is from overfishing in the oceans and stream river degradation. A joint resolution or memorial would serve to create awareness of these issues. Another threat is from allowing fish to folks to fish streams and rivers for trout, which are almost identical to the smolt that House Bill 2697 is trying to protect. I applaud ODFW for bait and hook restrictions, but more must be done to protect these juvenile fish. I respect the passion for wild salmon and steelhead expressed by the folks involved with promoting this bill. I have some concerns about filleting these fish on site and throwing the carcass into the river, so I investigated the attempts by Washington and Idaho to follow Alaska's lead in depositing the carcasses in the rivers. A suggestion was made by one of the Alaska folks that said maybe you should just try to cut up the carcasses or break up the carcasses. That way they'll deteriorate quicker. Apparently, Washington and Idaho's efforts began with a desire by folks who spent a few days out fishing and didn't want to keep the whole fish in storage. This is Idaho's rule. Idaho says no person shall have in the field or in transit any steelhead from which the head or tail has been removed unless the angler is ashore and done fishing for the day. I think Washington also says that they need to be done fishing for the day. And that the fish is processed or packaged with the skin naturally attached to the flesh, including a portion with a healed, clipped adipose in scar, fin scar. The fish must be processed and packaged in a manner that the number of fish harvested can be readily determined. Processed steelhead cannot be transported by boat. Now, Idaho also has a restriction on filleting of jack salmon, because jack salmon, there's a length restriction, I think 24 inches, and you need to have the whole fish, or else you can't determine the length of this fish, and that's important with jack salmon. One of my major concerns is that on rivers like Minor Saniab, and I say Minor Saniab, Representative Clem would know why I say that, our spring Chinook and summer steelhead return from March through the summer. They do not spawn until fall and winter, when the river flows increase dramatically. Our rivers drop in early June, warm up, and the weather is hot. If carcasses are returned during that time of year, their rotting will be offensive and could cause problems. Personally, I'd much rather gut the fish. I catch a lot of fish, knock on wood. Throw the entrails into the river and take the fish out to be processed in a sterile environment at home. And that's what we always used to do when it was legal. We would take it, clean it, on the riverbank, wash it out, throw the entrails into the river with the gills, and then we take the package, basically a package, home with us. So any determination that ODFW had to make or OSP needed to make could be made. There was another little side thing I had, and I meant to bring that up about the, they have, I think, radio transmitters or some kind of chips in these fish, and I think they put them in the bellies or in the heads, and I'm not quite sure how they're going to get those back with these regs. But Idaho's effort is new. I'm almost done. Idaho's effort is new, and the returning salmon are low. In talking with IDFG, they aren't aware of any instance where carcasses in the streams have had a detrimental effect on the aesthetics or water quality, and there wasn't negative public feedback, even on small streams. With tight regulation and review, I'd much rather see something like House Bill 2697 adopted than continue to take the entire fish home, which I'm sure everyone does. It would be much simpler to allow folks to clean, gut, and throw entrails back in the river. But I understand the entrails don't supply the nutrients that the carcass does. So, thanks. I appreciate you doing this, hearing this, moving forward with it. It is an issue.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Frank? I'm not seeing any. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate your comments. Is there anyone else that would like to testify today on House Bill 2697? I'm not seeing anyone. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2697, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2697. I recognize Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to the dated 3515 on House Bill 2697.
Vice Chair Esquivel moves adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2697, dated March 5th, 2013. Discussion on his motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection to that motion? Seeing none, so ordered. Recognize Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2697 as adopted be moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
I think I said that.
Okay.
But as amended.
As amended. Vice Chair Esquivel moves House Bill 2697 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on his motion? Seeing none, Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Thumb.
Aye.
Representative Peter.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitfield.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Excused.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received a majority votes, the motion passes, so ordered. I'm going to, if we'd ask, please, to have Representative Kenemer carry the bill. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2697. We have one last bill to hear this morning. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2027. Folks, this is our committee's first gotten stuff this session. So, kind of following up on the last bill.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is there stuffy now also?
I think Justin Martin from the Defenders of the Wildlife has a dash two that turns the word a non-lethal to lethal. And he wanted to come up and talk about that.
I'm seeing a negative.
Oh, sorry, I might have missed his email.
Beth, would you please remind us what we're about to do, I guess.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, House Bill 2027 is in front of you today in order to consider the Dash 2 amendments or discuss the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 2 amendments take the provisions that were originally in House Bills 2250 and 2251 on the Landowner Preference Program and the Southwest Damage Program and put them together into House Bill 2027.
Thank you very much. And with that, I'd like to call forward, please, Kurt Melcher. And Ron Anglin, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Good morning to both.
Morning of you. Again, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We did testify on both House Bills 2250 and House Bill 2251, as well as mentioned to you all several weeks ago that we had amendments to those bills. They were consensus amendments from our stakeholder process, and happy to report that those amendments now are all rolled up into House Bill 2027. Appreciate the courtesy of Representative Clem for allowing us to use that bill of his to accomplish this important changes to our landowner preference program and our statewide elk damage program. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions. I do have copies of our testimony from February 26th that I could resubmit for the record, if you like.
I think if you would like to do that, that's fine, but I think we already have you on record with the other bills, so that's fine as well.
Very good.
Morning. Anything further? I'm not...
Chair Witt, no, I'm fine.
Thanks very much, Ron. Questions for the department? I'm not seeing any. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Jerry Fish and Mike Dicer.
Jerry,
I think he's going to pass on that one.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, Mike Dyksel, Director of Forest Protection for the Oregon Forest Industries Council. what I've got staff passing out, I would agree with the Dash 2 amendments. Everything looks well. I thank Representative Clem and the Chair for their guidance in finding a vehicle to make these consensus recommendations from a work group come to be. Yeah. Since the time I testified on 2250 and 51, I talked a little bit about the damage component. Annually, I do consolidate a voluntary damage survey for our OFIC members. From that time to now, I'm passing out the results of the 2013 damage survey for deer and elk. And just to bring your attention to the magnitude of the problem, it is a voluntary survey, so I can't really tell you its trend data from year to year. It's highly dependent on the number of surveys that our foresters have the time to submit. But the differentiation between moderate damage, where your planting stocking numbers have obviously been diminished through deer and elk browse, the difference between that, which is at a tolerable level but down the road may cost you in stocking and future returns, but the severe ones are the ones where it takes you below state stocking standards, where reforestation efforts are required as well as tubing or something to keep it from happening again. So anyway, I thought it would be appropriate. I know it was of interest to you folks and to Representative Krieger as you, in relation to bear damage. This is kind of what it is with deer and elk damage. And then to the chair's point on some of the other costs associated with the public out there, in the last 2 weeks I've got word from one of our member companies in Northwest Oregon that four of their gates has been cut off in the middle of the night and obviously used for probably scrap metal somewhere. So just keeping you abreast of the issues, but we do support the Dash 2 amendments and really thank you for finding a vehicle for it to happen.
Thank you very, very much. Truly appreciate that. Anything for Mr. Dyksel? Not seeing any. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate the additional information as well. Anyone else to testify today on House Bill 2027? Come on forward. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
Please proceed.
My name is George Houston, past president from Oregon Chapter Foundation for North American Wild Sheep and a member of the Landowner Preference Task Force for the 2008 process and this most current process. These dash two amendments seem to reflect our agreements, and it appears the best way to go at this time. It is a pleasure for the hunters, which I represent, to be able to work with the cattle producers and the folks that live on the ground to try to build a win-win situation here.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, committee members, Jim Welsh, representing Oregon Cattlemen Association, and we were participants in the five-year review and in the development of what you see before you, and we certainly will be supportive of this. Oregon Cattlemen provided testimony on the other bills, and we would like to see this pass. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Houston or Mr. Welch? I'm not seeing any. Thanks very much. Al, come on up. Good morning to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. We appreciate the efforts of the task force. We were a member of the task force also. We've testified in favor of the LOP recommendations before, and would like to be on record again today. And we'd like to thank Representative Clem for letting us use his bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anything further for Mr. Elkins? Not seeing anything. Thank you. And Representative Clem, thank you very much for providing this vehicle. With that, I'm going to close. Before I do, committee members, we don't have a fiscal statement yet or a revenue statement, so we're going to wait to do a work session on this one. With that, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2027. Okay, and I will. I have to open it and then carry it over.
Just announce you're going to carry it.
Okay, I'm going to carry over a work session on House Bill 2027 to. When are we planning on doing that?
Tuesday.
Until Tuesday. With that, thank you all very much. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2252. Beth, can you remind us what that bill's about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2252 was heard on February 26th in this committee. It would authorize the Fish and Wildlife Commission to establish multi-year licenses and also addresses the fees charged by agents for those licenses. There is indeterminate revenue impact. You should have the statement in your file. Minimal expenditure impact. And currently there is a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, but you've received the okay to recommend rescinding that referral if you would like to.
Okay, very good. Why don't we have the rescission version? I could do it anyway. I think consent. All right. Thank you very much, Beth. And remind the committee there are no amendments to the bill. Recognize Vice Chair Esquivel.
We opened a work session.
Yes, I did.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2252 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means be rescinded and that the bill be placed on the consent calendar.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Esquivel moves House Bill 2252 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded and that the bill be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion on his motion? Seeing none, Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Whitsitt.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Yes.
Representative
Powell. Aye.
Representative
aye.
Vice Chair
Esquivel. Aye.
Excused.
Chair Witt.
Aye. The motion, having received the necessary majority, passes, and the bill is placed on the consent calendar. So ordered. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2252, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2249. Beth.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, House Bill 2249 was heard on February 21st. It establishes the Willamette River Basin Bonneville Power Administration Stewardship Fund. There is a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and again, initially a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means that you have the okay to rescind if you would like to.
All right, yes, I think the rescission. All right, with that, I'd like to recognize Vice Chair Esquivel, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would request that Mr. Melcher come up and answer a question on this that's been floating around a little bit. I have done a little bit of research on this, and it's my understanding, at least I'm to that understanding, that this particular pot of money that comes out of the Bonneville Power Administration, the BPA, is specifically for habitat enhancement, and it's not to acquire any particular real estate in the state of Oregon. Is that correct?
Chair Witt, Vice Chair Esquivel, this, again, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I have with me Chris Wheaton, the Northwest Region Manager, if there are detailed questions that I cannot answer. But this Willamette Basin Bonneville Power Administration Stewardship Fund is not utilized for any acquisitions. It's utilized for essentially stewardship of properties that are within the Bonneville program. And so the answer to your question is you're correct. There's no acquisition piece to this fund.
Thank you very much. Representative Esquivel?
Oh, I'm fine.
I'm sorry. Representative Krieger.
On the staff measure summary, the second paragraph, it talks about agreed to provide specific funding amounts for purchase of lands in free title or conservation easements. Is that different than what we heard?
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger. So the Bonneville, the settlement agreement that Bonneville signed does in fact do what you're describing. The stewardship fund that we're talking about here essentially just allows the department to have long-term resources to actually manage those properties and in conjunction with other ownerships, because they're not all, in fact, most of them are not state-owned.
Representative Whitson?
Yes. So, as I understand it, the legislature will have an active role in how the funds are going to be used. Is that correct?
Chair Witt, Representative Whitson, that's correct. Any expenditures from this fund will go through our biennial budget process where we secure the approval for the expenditures.
Okay. My concern is about the indeterminate nature at this point in time of the expenditures from this account. So we're essentially saying we're going to pass this and then we're going to decide at a later time how it's going to be spent. Is that correct?
Chair Witt, Representative Witt said that's correct. And remember that these stewardship funds will be coming to the agency over the next 15 years in annual increments. And so the account won't be populated, from the start. It will be populated, if you will, over the next 15 years. This bill establishes, one, the dedicated account so that we can keep track of those funds. But the expenditures from that account are still subject to the legislative oversight and our need to go through the full legislative process.
Okay. I have a basic problem with the fact that we're going to have $117 million sitting out there that we don't know how it's going to be spent right at this time. We're asking for something, and I'm concerned about where this is going in the future, that we don't have it delineated at this time to some degree, because that's a lot of money. So,
thank you very much. Representative Krieger.
After this 15-year period, are there going to be costs incurred to continue the program or these lands or management or easements, whatever you call them? Who's going to pick that up after the money's gone?
Sure. Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, one of the primary functions of this stewardship fund, if you will, is that we are hoping that it becomes a trust where we can continue the management in perpetuity off of the interest that's in the account.
It doesn't say, does that say it here somewhere?
Not in the bill, Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, not in the bill specifically.
Please.
I'm not certain that the bill is ready to go. That's just my opinion. I'd like to see a little more clarity about the dollars and cents and the timelines and what you're planning to do in the future. If you've got plans for the future and it's not part of the discussion, I feel very uncomfortable where that could lead.
All right. Yes, Representative Clem.
You know, thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the nice things about the cross-pollination that sometimes goes on with our committees, two of us here sit on the Land Use Committee, and we're dealing with similar concerns about mm-hmm. properties purchased and held and whether they ought to go through some additional processes before just acquiring through the public. And, you know, I don't think we came to any definitive consensus by any means, but we definitely, I think, realize there's an issue. So I have some ideas if you want to hold off a little bit on this one. I have some ideas that came up in the other committee that we might be able to work with folks to make them feel slightly more comfortable.
Representative Clem, appreciate that suggestion very, very much. I am very reluctant to be moving a bill when perhaps some clarity can provide significantly more comfort for some of our committee members, and would feel much better about that. So if you would be willing, Representative Clem, to lend those suggestions maybe to the department and anyone else who has some suggestions, those I know would be most welcome, and we will we'll get those squared away and this bill back in front of us here in the very near future. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thanks.
With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2249 and open up a work session on our last bill this morning, House Bill 2649, Farm to School. Beth, would you remind us about this one, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2649 was heard on February 21st. The bill addresses grant money for the purchase of Oregon food products for schools and also the funding of educational activities related to farm-to-school programs. There is in front of you a Dash 5 amendment. This amendment would direct the Department of Education to distribute grant money to ensure that at least 80% of those funds are used for food procurement and at least 10% are used for educational activities. It authorizes the department to award grants to districts only if they can demonstrate that they have programs to both purchase food and also to provide related educational opportunities. On the Dash 5 amendment, there's no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal statement in your packet, which is really there for the purposes of transmitting the bill to the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
All right, very good. And not trying to put anyone on the spot, but how much of a change is this from the original bill?
Would you please? Mr. Chair, the two things that I mentioned are the changes from the original bill, the requirement that 80% go to food procurement and mm-hmm. at least 10 go to educational activities, and then also the requirement that a school district have both parts of a program in order to receive grant money.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And you might, Mr. Chair,
Representative Clem, please.
The original bill, you might recall, we mentioned, had this really prescriptive language that exactly 85 mm-hmm. and 15, and not a penny different, which was a little sort of absurd. So that's the change here to at least 80 and 10. So there's a little bit of a shift in terms of what could possibly happen, but it's mostly for flexibility that people aren't having to literally try and make it be exactly 15% spent on the garden or spent on administration or spent on the, okay, you know, something, which was getting hard to do.
Okay, yes, Representative Krieger?
Kind of, I remember where this was going, and it appeared that a lot of these programs are more not in the rural areas. They're a little closer into bigger areas. And the requirement of the part about education, is that prescriptive? In other words, was there going to be a program specifically supplied to those small districts if they actually have people participate in it, small schools, as to what the educational component would be?
Representative Klum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative, for the question. So we have a person who works at the Department of Education in this program who helps develop for schools, you know, what garden-based curriculum might work. Now, the issue was more if they have a garden or not. What do you do if they don't have a garden? Because some of the language before sort of sounded like you needed to have a garden. And Representative Woodson said, well, in some areas, you know, of course, there may not be one. So part of the language is designed to actually create flexibility. So it's not you'd have to have a garden. It's you could have curriculum about it as well. And then there's a person on staff at ODE who can help develop that curriculum, who we pay to do that. And there's a bunch of nonprofits, some of which are coming to the table now, who also develop curriculum and help do it.
That's good. Good morning.
Stand ready to answer questions if you'd like.
Some of the members may have some questions, and if you've been listening to our discussion, if you have anything further to add, we'd be pleased to hear that.
Yeah, Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, members of the committee, I would respectfully, Cassandra Griffin, Upstream Public Health. Thank you. The extremely prescriptive prior language, respectfully, Representative Clem, was 87.5% of every previous grant was required to be for food procurement, and 12.5% was required to be for education. And we're just trying to allow school districts to have a little bit more flexibility to ask what they actually need. I'd like to call out that of the 11 districts that the Department of Education previously awarded the pilot round of grants, there was Ontario, Joseph, Roseburg, and Sherman County to represent rural parts of Oregon. So the bill actually does call out the previous language that is staying in, calls out asking for a diversity of school districts to receive the grants and to provide grants for a diversity of products. So fish products are included, coastal products are included now. Bend in particular got a grant now to bring shrimp and fish into their school food service. The education component is quite broad and can be used for food, garden, and agricultural education, and that can actually also include coastal products. So if a school doesn't have a school garden but wants to make a trip out to the docks to visit some fishermen and talk about fishing and food processing, that can qualify. So we can and do provide materials and support for people about what those programs can look like, but there's also a very high degree of flexibility for where they are and whether it's appropriate to go out and see the local ranches or to have an on-site garden or to have a chef come visit.
Representative Woodson?
Yes, I was wondering, for example, Klamath County is the largest beef-producing cattle, the beef cattle-producing county in the state of Oregon, and so would you also allow beef, since we probably don't have fish there?
Mullet. We can fix that too, Representative.
Yeah. thank you, Representative Witt, Chair Witt, Representative Woodson. For the record, I'm Rick Sherman, Oregon Department of Education, Farm to School Programs, Farm to School School Garden Coordinator, excuse me. In answer to your question, too, there's a couple schools that, in particular, Bethel School District in Eugene is getting beef from Painted Hills Beef, and they're able to do that as a center of a plate item with this bill where they would not have otherwise. There's another school, which we forgot to, North Powder, over in the very remote area, and some of those places are planning to do the same with local ranchers.
Great.
And if I might add, Representative Whitsitt, members of the committee, I believe when we had the hearing 2 weeks ago, one of the people here speaking was Pam Leslie, was the food services director from Lebanon, Oregon, and she mentioned a very unique program that they're doing there with their grant that they received under the pilot, which is that the school district is working with the FFA program to actually buy beef from the students, which is about as local as it can get, supporting the beef program.
I like that.
Great.
That is absolutely excellent. Those are the kinds of things that are just a delight to hear. So,
yeah.
Are there any other clarifications that folks might like? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much. This was very helpful. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Representative Clem, as I remember during testimony on this bill, it was noted that this is perhaps one of the largest economic development opportunities that we have before us this session. So.
Mr. Please. Chair, I just realized, I even though I have no idea where Diamond Fruit, our fruit cooperative, sells their fruit, I should declare a possible conflict of interest in case they eventually sell it to a school. My orchard does not sell product. We pack it and then they sell it. But just in case,
all right,
I'll submit the written potential conflict of interest.
So it's got a Clem pear in it?
It's possible. Suzuki pear, actually. I'm the son-in-law. I don't get my name on anything.
Your potential conflict is so noted for the record. Any other clarifications? With that, I'd like to recognize, please, Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -5 amendments dated 3/1/13 on House Bill 2649.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Esquivel moves to adopt the -5 amendments dated March 1st, 2013 to House Bill 2649. Is there any discussion on his motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection to his motion? So ordered. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2649 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee of Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Esquivel has moved House Bill 2649 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion on his motion? I'm not seeing any.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
On that cross-pollination topic, I'm just hoping we can urge Representative Unger to fight for some funding for this baby down there, because he's our cross-pollinator with Ways and Means.
Noted. Although I fear this might actually end up in the Education Subcommittee.
I know, but it's a big committee. You can wheel and deal, maybe, a little something.
Wheel and deal.
I like that reference, cross-pollination, agriculture.
Oh, Lord. When's the canola?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative
GMO.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Absolutely aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Excused.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion is passed. And Representative Clem, would you like to carry this bill to the floor?
Down to Ways and Means.
Excuse me.
I'll
sorry.
Take it down there.
No.
Right,
I'm sorry.
He can
my mistake.
He can testify.
My mistake. Not necessary. All right. Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2649. Discussion for the good of the order? Anything today?
One bill carried over for a little more clarity. I should have read it sooner so that you were aware of some concerns, but I think they probably can help us get some answers of what I think is going to take part other than
that. I think they're minor changes.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's good that we have that discussion when we have some amendments, and I don't think it's going to take very long to get that thing the I's dotted and the T's crossed and that bill back before us, and everybody feeling a lot more comfortable than we did today. And quite frankly, I'm grateful for the discussion that we had. So it's going to be a better bill when it comes back before us. Beth, can you tell us, please, coming events?
Coming events. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tuesday, March 12th, public hearing, possible work session on two bills, 3201, which deals with damages resulting from forest fires, and House Bill 3199, which prohibits the release of sky lanterns, exploding targets, and various other items during fire season. And then three work sessions, 2257 on amending water rights certificates, 2396 on large woody debris, and 2390 on, it's the bill that deals with Fish and Wildlife Department appointing agents to hunt cougars and bears.
All right. Last and final call for anything more of the good of the order? Seeing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.